Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, October 12, 2023. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy National Savings Day. How about that? A day that recognizes those who value the act of saving and shows that getting started isn't as hard as it may sometimes seem. Many of us already save every day, especially owners of physical gold and silver. We've been doing it for a long time, a lot of us. Saving a portion of your paycheck each month or retirement check isn't that far of a stretch. In fact, it's pretty doggone easy. And so I have one suggestion to our listeners. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading and buy one or more gold and silver coins today. Then save a portion of your paycheck or retirement check every month. Set up a precious metals IRA even with us and have your account be automatically deposited. You'll never miss it. And before you know it, you'll have built a nest egg for your and your family's future. Call us at 1-800-375-4188. We're not certified financial planners, but we sure do know a lot about buying and selling gold and silver.
You know, I think
that sound too much like a sales pitch?
No. I think it's very educational. Very educational.
Good.
Very educational sales pitch.
That's our intention.
But hey, we can't be on the air, you know, if you don't protect yourself and buy from Discount Gold and Silver, we can't be on the air anymore. It's that simple. So, you know, we always encourage your support. We appreciate your support, and it's not only it supports us; it supports other people too. It supports other Beth Ann, CSC Talk Radio, like Butch Paul on his program. We support Greg Hunter. So, yeah, the funds go a long way when you purchase from Discount Gold and Silver. And I don't advertise with just anybody. So it's, you know, it's really important. But more important is, is that you protect yourself. And gold today, with that, we'll get right into gold, was down $6 at $1,869. Silver was down 26 cents at 21.88. Platinum was down 23 at 875. and palladium was down 36 at 1,158. The USDX today was stronger by 0.84 at 106.56. Crude oil was up 0.4 cents, 83.53. Paper markets today, well, the Dow was down almost 300 points, I believe, and they brought it back in the last hour of trade, 173 to the downside on the Dow. S&P was down 27 points. The NASDAQ was down 85. Asian markets were all positive overnight. European markets, Germany and France were lower. FTSE was higher. 10-year yield, 4.70, so that was much stronger today. And natural gas today was down almost to 1%, 3.34. So, you know, it is really interesting to see these markets, and I'm just waiting for them to break open. And, you know, it's like, how much can these markets handle? You know, I mean, you could throw anything at it. Oh, it doesn't seem to matter. We'll still manage to go up. That's how much control they have of it. Or is that how much control that was taking out of people's hands and their for their own money? Because before, people would have sold. Be safe. You could put it back. But now, you're all stuck with the certain amounts coming out of your 401s, and you got, you know, billions and trillions of dollars in the retirement accounts. As we're just talking here in the States. So, yeah, you could throw anything at these markets anymore, and it's like nothing seems to faze them. So, it's, you know, it is amazing what they're able to do. Consumer prices are up slightly. They're higher than expected today in for September, and the consumer price index increased 0.4% on the month and 3.7% from a year ago. Now that's compared with respective Dow Jones estimates of 0.3% and 3.6%. And, hey, let's exclude all the ever-so-important food and energy. The so-called core CPI increased 0.3% on the month and 4.1% on a 12-month basis. So it's still there. The index for shelter, that makes up about one-third of the CPI weighting, accelerated 0.6% for the month and 7.2% from a year ago. And energy costs rose 1.5%. Let's see, food was up 0.2% for the third month in a row. Vehicle prices were mixed, Dave.
Yeah, how about used vehicles down 8% on an annual basis?
Wow.
Woohoo!
Woohoo!
New cars, on the other hand, if you're
so much more important than food and energy, huh?
Yeah, if you're if your mortgage is paid off and are looking for another small mortgage, hey, go buy a new car.
Yeah,
it's going to cost you. You also have apparel, clothing, down almost 1%. Medical care, services, and commodities down 0.3 for the month. Now, the CPI increase, small as it was, means workers' wages still fell in real terms. That is, when adjusted for inflation, real average hourly earnings dropped 0.2% for the month. Bob Frick, an economist with the Navy Federal Credit Union, said just because the rate of inflation is stable for now doesn't mean its weight isn't increasing every month on families' budget.
Yeah.
A very important point to remember. Now, again, CPI report comes with Fed officials contemplating their next policy moves. I think their next meeting's in 20 days. Minutes from the Fed September meeting, which were out yesterday, reflected divisions, some of them deep, within the Federal Open Market Committee. They got a couple of new members on there. And some of these divisions between the so-called hawks and doves. I mean, I can't say that we can characterize them as intense, because we're not there and the minutes don't reflect their moods, but certainly their visions about whether they stay put, whether they have to increase again. We're just going to have to wait and see. I mean, they decided to hold steady in September. Who knows? We got multiple Fed officials have said that these Treasury yield increases jumping pretty much on their own, not entirely. At one point recently hitting their 16-year high could negate the need for further policy tightening. And as we'll talk about a little bit later today, the future markets are pricing only a pretty small chance that the Fed's going to hike again by the end of the year. We will see, Melody.
Dave?
What?
It's another jobless claims Thursday.
Yay!
Phew,
I was worried there for a
second. And guess what? The unemployment benefits was unchanged.
Come
last
on.
Week. Well, you know, there was only
the
a 3-day.
Exact same number.
Well, there was a 4-day work week last week, remember? No, that was this week. Yeah, that was this week, right? Yes.
Oh, the Columbus Day.
Yeah, that was this week.
Indigenous Day, whatever. Yes.
How dare you say Indigenous Day? It's Columbus Day.
Whatever.
And so anyway, we will see the difference next week. So it still remains at low levels, and it seems like the job market remains fairly strong. I don't know how many part-time jobs are included in there, but jobless claims stayed at 209,000 for the week ending October 7th. The four-week moving average of claims, which strips out week-to-week volatility, it fell, though, by 3,000. So, so we'll just have to see, you know. I'm sorry, I can't believe this, Dave, that, you know, you keep raising these rates and it doesn't have any impact on the economy. The only impact that we really have so far experienced is what mortgage rates are nearing 8%. And of course the bond market has been pretty much gutted. So,
yeah.
But you know, but really it doesn't affect anything else. I mean, who in the heck are they trying to kid?
Themselves, perhaps, I don't know, each other, seems to be the extent of it. I mean, the housing market's been in a recession for
last year
at least, and remains mired in stagnant territory. And it is amazing that this job market has remained sturdy as these interest rates have gone up by 5 percentage points, basically. And again, they continue raising hope that the Fed will stick the soft landing, the Goldilocks scenario, beating inflation without triggering that good old broad recession. We'll see. I mean, economist Rubila Faruqi, who's the chief guy at High Frequency Economics, says demand for workers remains strong, even as the Fed has taken aggressive action to soften labor conditions. Businesses are not shedding workers at a rapid pace. Overall, 1.7 million Americans were collecting some kind of unemployment check by the end of September. That, in fact, was up 30,000 from the week before. Now, you know, you alluded to this, the part-timers. I mean, there must be a good chunk of part-timers out there, particularly part-timers who want to work full-time but can't because they either can't find them, they're not available, or their schedules, whatever, their lives don't permit it. Because, I mean, forget the headline unemployment rate, ladies and gentlemen. I won't even call it the real. The closer to real number is over 7%, including those part-time discouraged and discouraged job seekers. So keep that in mind. We'll always remind you.
Well, I guess, you know, as long as there's credit cards out there, I guess people feel they can weather anything, so I suppose. The United, and, you know, and that's another reason why, you know, perhaps we're not seeing any big drops in the stock market because people are using their credit cards instead of pulling out their money. Where, you know, if they were smart, they'd pull out their money and so they wouldn't have to pay interest on it. But that could be a reason why you have these, while these retirees, you know, you have the baby boom generation. That's pretty much all that's in retirement right now. I don't know. I think that might have something to do with it, but I'm not quite sure. But
what would happen, do you think? This is silly and off the subject. Well, no, it's not off the subject, but off the wall, perhaps. But what do you think would happen if there'd be like a national slate of political candidates for Congress, let's say, that are running on a slogan to ban all credit cards, that we're a country that is up to our necks in debt, and this is our only way out of it. We've got to, you know, we got to do something ourselves, take control. And it starts with us, ladies and gentlemen. So whatever we're calling our party, this national campaign, you know, we're saying, hey, the heck with 25 and 30% interest rate based payments. We're done with it. Cut up your cards. Because if you don't, the banks can no longer issue them. Assuming that would pass constitutional muster, with banks spending who knows how many millions of dollars to buy votes in Congress, this would never see the light of day. But it's interesting to think about it for a minute.
Well, you know, they need to go back to means testing. You know, they just allow everybody and their brother to have credit cards instead of actually using a credit score, however that works in today's world.
Yeah.
You know, there shouldn't be subprime lending. There shouldn't be, you know, if you breathe and you have a pulse, you can get a mortgage.
Yeah.
So those are the things, you know, again, we got a lot of things on the books. A lot of laws, like the immigration laws, they're there, but they're not enforced. Even some of our gun laws, they're there, but they're not enforced. You know, you can go through a plethora of things that, you know, it's all or nothing. It's, you know, we're going to change all these regulations and so forth just so the multinational corporations and the politicians can make buku bucks. And, you know, I saw today, Delta, they had a 60% profit. Okay? How many times do we have to bail you out? How about giving us, why don't you pay that 30% profit to the United States as we bail you out so many times? You know? They get 60%. Forget about it filtering down.
All right, I want you at the top of this ticket, Melody Cedarstrom.
What?
I want you at the top of this ticket. Come on, we're doing this.
You know, take 30% of your profits and fix the airports. All you have to do is paint them. Upgrade the systems. No, they want government money. They want taxpayer money. It's not government money. It's taxpayer money. Ugh. Anyway, the auto workers, United Auto Workers. Well, you know, Ford thought that they were cozying up to the UAW, but I guess it didn't work. Last night, 8,700 members left their jobs at Ford's Kentucky truck plant in Louisville. And this morning, Union President Sean Fain hinted at a further action against Stellantis. Here's to hoping talks at Stellantis today are more productive than Ford yesterday. You know what? I don't know what this guy's doing. I mean, I know his philosophy and everything, but is he going to be causing more damage than good?
Whatever you want to say about him, he's certainly a disruptor.
You know, and I mean, to some degree, I get what he's saying. But on the other hand, I think he's going around it the wrong way. But Ford's truck plant makes heavy-duty F-Series pickup trucks and large Ford and Lincoln SUVs. And the vehicles made at the plant generate $25 billion per year in revenue. Fain also said that the union has waited long enough, but Ford hasn't gotten the message. And the message that I'm getting is we're heading into a break, so we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you. Never gonna give you up.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom here with Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. The website, dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog, edited, produced by our own Dave Allen. So, I think everybody knows the strange markets that we're in, and there's just a couple of things we want to talk about first. You know, we were talking to strikes, the actors' strikes, their talks ended. I thought they were just about ready to, you know, finish it up, but yeah. You know, I guess they said, So that strike's still going on now, Dave.
Yeah, a lot of posturing, name calling, each other, each side calling the other bullies and bullying tactics. And I'm guessing they're going to find a way to resolve it by the end of the year. Yeah, by perhaps Christmas, if not. Earlier, but I mean, you don't know. This will be a test to see a test of the financial wherewithal of both sides, really. I mean, particularly the companies. I mean, who have still have the income coming in, but not to the extent it had been. But movies that were made before this, these two strikes, I mean, they're sort of coming online now. The test is going to be, you know, how does that affect the coming 6 months to a year? I think that's where we'll start to see the, you know, the rubber meet the road. But yeah, be nice to, for all parties, just to get this done and, you know, move on. And on the other hand, who the heck cares?
But, yeah, the actors. I wonder who's really holding it up, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if it's the I mean, certainly the numbers of more poorly paid actors, you know, more the aspiring ones, you know, who we mostly see in commercials and in bit parts. I mean, their numbers far outweigh the A-list mega millionaires. But I'm sure that that money too can be
probably pretty good
brought to bear as well. You know, however you see their politics, and I suspect a lot of listeners don't support these folks. But the hosts of the late night shows. I like what they did during the writer's strike. The main ones. You know, Colbert and Fallon and Kimmel, Seth Meyers banded together and created this new podcast, comedy podcast mainly, and all the proceeds they got from advertising, you know, went into supporting their respective writing staffs. So that was pretty cool. I have no clue about the numbers they raised, but, you know. Anyway, whatever. Good PR, if nothing less, like nothing more, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I'm kind of worn out already with this Egypt and Gaza thing going on.
Get used to it. I think it's going to be here for a little while.
You know, I mean, well, you know, I don't mind finding new news on it, but, you know, it's. So much of it isn't worth, you know, but we did have Antony Blinken, Secretary of State, you know, and Biden, their vows to support Israel. It's, you know, the international aid groups warned of a worsening humanitarian crisis after Israel has halted the food, water, fuel, and electricity to the millions of people. So it's they're not going to back down. And I do agree, like right now, what they are trying to do is to keep this contained.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they're going to be able to. In order to keep it contained, I think Israel's going to have to eat some words or something. And I'm not sure Netanyahu will, because, I mean, this is what he's always wanted, I think. In my view, in my opinion. So,
I think a lot of people would share that.
Yeah. So, so I don't think, so we'll see.
What's striking me is the impact it's going to have on a humanitarian base. I mean, after this is the fifth day, almost 500,000 people, over 15, closer to 20% of Gaza's entire 2.5 million population have fled their homes and are in refugee camps or in UN-run facilities, while others are, if they're lucky enough, staying with relatives. And then the other thing is what impact this is going to have on U.S. financial support for Ukraine against Russia now that, you know, here's additional financial strains in a deficit run economy, debt ridden economy. That you know, all other things being equal, you know, is it good if there's they somehow find at the end of the day that, you know, there's $20 billion or $10 billion available for foreign support. How much of that's going to go to Israel and their fight against Hamas, and how much is going to go back to Zelensky? Zelensky, interestingly, wants to
What the heck is he going to Israel for?
Well, I think...
What a bum!
Because it's...
He's going over there to ramp it up. That's what he's doing.
Well, that might be an effect. I think he's going to gain more support for continued funding from particularly the U.S.
Yeah. Doesn't he get enough from the U.S.? Go home, buddy. Get out of there.
Still at home, but I think he just wants to.
Well, he's going to Israel. I don't know when. Soon. Did you?
He wants to. I don't know that those arrangements have been made yet, but.
Well, you can tell I'm no fan of Zelensky. I think he's milking everything for what it is, and he has no intentions of trying to have any type of discussions with Russia. Of course, the U.S. is saying, no, don't do that, you know. But where did I see? I'll have to see if I can't find that. But anyway, let's move on and talk about U.S. crude oil exports hit record highs in the first half of the year. 3.99 million barrels per day, and that's up about 20% from the first half of 2022. This is all from the EIA. The largest share of U.S. crude oil that is exported made its way to Europe at 1.75 million barrels per day, mostly to the Netherlands and to the United Kingdom. Asia was the second largest destination, 1.68 million. And, of course, yes, we know the largest portion was going to China and South Korea. So, U.S. refineries are geared to process heavy sour crude oil, while most of the oil produced here is light sweet crude, Dave.
Yeah, the EIA said that some U.S. refiners on the Gulf Coast have invested in expanding their light sweet crude oil processing capacity, but for many refiners, especially in the Midwest and along the Gulf Coast, refining discounted heavy sour crude oil grades remains more profitable. Now, while most of the U.S. oil exports are heading to the Netherlands, the U.K., China, and South Korea, most of our imports of heavy oil are coming from Mexico and Canada, 10 million barrels per day. According to EI, EIA, if U.S. crude oil is now just shy of 13 million barrels a day, crude oil production, that is, compared with 12 this time last year. And similar to what we saw at the end of 2019, just before the pandemic, 2020. Interesting. Interesting numbers. It's been we've watched crude domestic and Brent, international Brent roller coaster this year. Even with some of the prices going up a couple months ago, we saw prices at the pump coming down. It turns out that's a big function of what's happening at the refinery. So it's interesting stuff. I still can't wrap my head around the machinations of that. Interesting nevertheless, Melody.
Yes, very much so. Well, you know, America is becoming a new soybean producer. And it's just like, you know, because I don't know. It would be interesting to see how much of the soybeans is contributed to the big commercial farmers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, because I guarantee you they probably handle most of it. The little farmer is not going to do soybeans, except maybe for his animal feed. And, of course, You know, that might come from the smaller farmer, but I don't think it's going to be the $124 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. And that's according to the National Oilseed Processors Association and the United Soybean Board. I didn't know they had them. And so, 40 years ago, in 1980, the average soybean production was 31 bushels. And today, the same acre produces 51 bushels on average. And sometimes it's even higher than that. So we've seen the global soybean market exploded in recent years with U.S. production at the forefront. And I don't even think soybean is really all that healthy for us. So
yeah, a lot of health nuts say ew to soybean-based whatever, milk.
Yes. Yeah. You know, so that's take away our healthy food. We import more than, you know, food. Let us just supply our own food.
Yeah, it's interesting. We live on the edge of suburbia where, you know, right really down the street starts thousands upon thousands of acres of farmland. Most of it in this area privately owned. Some probably small corporations, none of the big ones that I can tell, big multinationals are in this area. But what I've noticed over the last couple of years, and it's been gradual, is that these huge fields of corn have been replaced by these huge fields of soybeans.
Yeah.
and seeing this article sort of confirmed my own observations, and you wonder how much, you know, like corn, these companies are being subsidized with taxpayer dollars to plant but not sell, you know, like a lot of these subsidies used to work. I'll have to look into that and maybe we'll report back to listeners in a coming show.
Let's see. How much time do we got? 3 minutes. We got ExxonMobil has emphasized plans to boost production on this big blockbuster deal they announced yesterday, and would make it the single biggest player in the strategically important U.S. Permian Basin. So, you know, with the war in Ukraine, it has altered the world energy markets. Kind of underscoring the importance of domestic production. Oil giants plans to acquire Pioneer Natural Resources, an all-stock deal valued at roughly $60 billion. And the deal is going to make Exxon the largest single player in the Permian Basin, the largest U.S. oil field. So they must know something that we don't. The combined companies plan to boost production by 700,000 more barrels of oil and gas per day over the next 4 years, bringing total Permian output to 2 million barrels per day by 2027. That's about a 21% increase, Dave, from the previous production goals.
Yeah, well, remember, too, ExxonMobil posted a profit of more than $55 billion last year alone, an all-time record. Even the president noted, however you feel about him, this got to bring somewhat of a smile to your face when he said Exxon made more money than God this year. He said last year, just crazy numbers. So I wonder if they're going to pay $60 billion for this acquisition. Well, they earned it just last year. Of course, some of that, if not a big chunk, if it's already been passed on to shareholders and increased dividends and certainly share buybacks. So I don't know if they're planning to go into debt somewhat to do that or not. Anyway.
Okay. See, where do we want to go next? We only have about a minute. Let's go to the U.S. aircraft carrier. It has arrived in South Korea. A U.S. nuclear-powered aircraft carrier has arrived in South Korea as North Korea's Kim Jong-un continues exchanging messages with Putin. The USS Ronald Reagan and its battle group came to the southeastern South Korean port of Busan after participating in a trilateral South Korean U.S. Japanese maritime exercise in international waters just off the South Korean island. So it's going to stay there until next Monday. And so I don't know why next Monday is the special date that it's only going to stay there, Dave.
I don't know. Maybe it's going to head over toward the Eastern Mediterranean. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? But I hear the music. We'll be back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, here with you in this third and final segment today. Melody taking care of other client business. You know where to reach her, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, for you retirees old enough to be collecting your government check, Social Security beneficiaries going to see a 3.2% boost to your benefits next year. The Social Security Administration announced today the annual cost of living adjustment is going to affect more than 71 million Social Security and Supplemental Security Income, SSI, beneficiaries. These benefit adjustments are made each year to help beneficiaries and their benefits supposedly keep pace with inflation. Change is going to result in an estimated average monthly Social Security benefit increase of about $50. The average monthly benefit will be $1,907, up from $1,848 this year. Now, most recipients will see the increase in their monthly checks or checking account deposits starting in January. SSI beneficiaries, however, will see the increase in their December payments. Just how much of an increase retired beneficiaries will see in their Social Security checks are also going to depend on the size of Medicare Part B premiums for 2024, which haven't been announced just yet. Typically, those premiums are deducted from the Social Security checks. Now, the Medicare trustees have projected the average monthly premium may be up about $10, $174.80 next year, from $164.90 this year for most beneficiaries. The 2024 benefit increase a lot lower than the record 8.7 COLA adjustment beneficiaries saw this year, which was the biggest boost in four decades. It's also lower than the 5.9% COLA for in 2022. Now, the average cost of living adjustment has been 2.6% over the past 20 years, according to the Nonpartisan Senior Citizens League. That annual adjustment is based on the Consumer Price Index for urban wage earners and clerical workers, the so-called CPIW. Data from the third quarter is added and averaged and then compared with the third quarter average from the previous year, and the amount of increase determines the size of the COLA. Now, the 2024 adjustment comes as many retirees are still struggling with higher prices across the country. An AARP spokesperson said, "We know older Americans are still feeling the sting when they buy groceries and gas, making every dollar important." Well, the Social Security trust funds are facing a funding shortfall in the next decade. Certain proposals to fix the program have also included a change the way the annual COLA is calculated. Some argue that the so-called CPIE, the Consumer Price Index for the elderly, may be a better measure for the cost seniors face and help them maintain their purchasing power. But that measurement may not necessarily provide a bigger annual boost, according to past research. Now, interestingly, higher Social Security benefits, particularly this year due to the cost of living adjustment, put low-income beneficiaries at risk for losing access to food stamps or rental assistance, again, according to the Senior Citizen League. Others may have seen their Social Security benefit income become subject to taxes for the first time, or may have seen the taxes on that income go up. Up to 85% of benefits may be taxed based on certain income thresholds that are not adjusted for inflation. Hey, as the nation's birth rate continues to fall, there are growing concerns about the long-term economic impact. That is, a smaller populations means, hold on to your wallets, ladies and gentlemen, less tax revenue, and that could reduce future program funding for programs like Social Security and Medicare, they fear. But some experts say, and please don't kill the messenger, that immigration policy reform, of all things, could be one solution. U.S. birth rate fell slightly last year over 2021, with roughly 3.7 million babies born nationwide. And the birth rate still hasn't recovered to pre-pandemic levels, according to the CDC. Now, growing concern for some economists, the birth rate generally has been below the replacement rate, which they say is needed to maintain the current population, and that's been since 1971. And consistently has been below the replacement rate since 2007. Jackie, I don't know if it's Vimo or Vimo, I'm going to say Vimo. Jackie Vimo, a senior policy analyst at the National Immigration Law Center, notes that the tax base is shrinking and allowing immigrants to come in lawfully, she says, is an easy solution. She calls it the answer hiding in plain sight. Now, a lot of people would disagree with that, but in 2022, foreign-born U.S. residents, including legally admitted immigrants, refugees, temporary residents, and, yes, undocumented immigrants represented about 18% of all U.S. workers, up from a little over 17% the year before. That's according to the government. I don't know if that's a Census Bureau number. Vimmo believes the pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants would offer eligible workers better education and employment opportunities while boosting federal tax revenue at the same time. Depending on the scope of changes, which would in turn, other things being equal, lower future budget deficits. Others fear that, well, just depending on who's in power at any given point in time, that extra tax revenue would just be put to fund new programming or additional programming for existing programs. In a 2021 report, the Center for American Progress modeled the economic impact of four scenarios involving a pathway to legalization and citizenship for undocumented immigrants. We talked about that on this program. The most comprehensive option, a pathway to citizenship for all undocumented immigrants, would increase U.S. GDP, according to this report, by $1.7 trillion over 10 years and create 439,000 new jobs. Also, eligible workers would earn about $14,000 more a year after the 10th year. Vimmo said immigrants currently without a pathway to citizenship still pay billions in taxes, even though they don't or aren't eligible to benefit from many of the programs they pay into, such as Social Security and Medicare. According to the report, according to the American Immigration Council, undocumented immigrant-led households paid an estimated $19 billion in federal taxes and close to $12 billion in combined state and local taxes. That was a 2019 figure. However, other experts caution that growing the population through expanded immigration may not boost tax revenues as expected because there's little control over the ages of most new residents. Steve Camerota, who's director of research for the Center for Immigration Studies, says you'll have a bigger economy and have more tax revenue, but you also have more people. But he continued, there's no evidence your per capita GDP would go up. It's been nearly 40 years since the country made significant changes to immigration policy, one of the most contentious issues in Washington and among our own listeners. Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986 sort of reset the clock on undocumented immigration, but didn't address future inflows or ways for people to enter the country lawfully. And that's the problem we've been facing for decades. And there has been a political environment in Washington to implement what Vimmo calls common sense policy. While nearly three-fourths of Americans say it's unacceptable for people to immigrate illegally to the U.S., still a majority, 56%, support making legal immigration easier, and 55% support a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants who are already here. That's according to a 2021 survey by the Cato Institute. We can do better, ladies and gentlemen. Let's hope our elected representatives find a way. Hey, nobody ever said getting inflation down from its recent highs of 9% to something more tolerable would be easy. September's CPI reported this morning confirms that this particular dragon still has some fire left in it. Consumer price index rose 0.4% last month, a tick higher than analysts had expected. Core, as we mentioned, excluding food and energy, up 0.3. Year-over-year inflation stable at 3.7, while core inflation fell to 4.1 from 4.3%. Now, while the latest numbers are a far cry from the super high inflation seen last year, they indicate that bringing price pressures down isn't as fast or smooth as it appeared to be over the summer. For example, core CPI rose just 0.2% in June and July versus the 0.3 in both August and September. A month ago, we talked that core CPI had risen at 2.4% annually over the preceding quarter or 3 months, and that was consistent with, or closer anyway, to the Fed's 2% target. But the three-month number rebounded in September, is now back up to over 3%. a key culprit in persistent inflation has been what's called shelter costs, rent, what have you, which rose 0.6% in September. Now, interestingly, part of that reflected a 4.2% surge in hotel prices itself, kind of a retracing of an unusually steep drop the month before. The report also showed 0.6% rise in rents, which appears to on track to fall in the coming months based on real-time private sector measures of the major rental markets in the country. But even if rent price growth recedes as anticipated, prices for services excluding rent have accelerated over the last 3 months. First up 0.2% in July, then up 0.5% in August, and 0.6% in September. And while Fed policymakers prefer to look at through energy price swings, the surge in oil prices over the summer could still be filtering through to other prices like airfares, especially, and shipping costs. Oil prices have been broadly in retreat in October, though conflict in the Middle East will likely change that. Now, Richard DeChazel at William Blair said it's consistent with the view that the last mile on inflation to the Fed's 2% target will be on a bumpier path, where progress is much slower than the initial retrenchment from 9% last year to today. This morning's inflation data was were hardly a five-alarm fire type of report and is unlikely to force any major readjustment in the Fed's policy in the near term, but it may shift the odds around what comes next. The Fed appears likely to leave interest rates unchanged for the second straight meeting when it convenes in 20 days, particularly in light of a run-up in longer-term bond yields in recent weeks, which has decimated that market. As certain is whether it'll raise interest rates one more time at the final meeting in mid-December. At the margins, the September CPI data tilt the odds toward one more hike, but I don't think so. Then there'll be two more rounds of monthly employment and inflation data before then. Of course, two more months worth of developments in financial markets and geopolitics. The yield on two-year Treasury securities rose to almost 5.1% this morning, reflecting somewhat higher odds of another rate hike. This is the second straight major data release that's coming on the hot side, coming 6 days after that blockbuster job report for September last week. Now, while each can be explained away or minimized in isolation, both suggest an undercurrent of strength in the data. And that may empower the monetary hawks on the FOMC. As of early afternoon today, Fed fund future traders see an 86% probability that the Fed will leave rates unchanged at their next meeting in November. They see a 64% chance of the same at the Fed's December meeting. The traders see a 96% likelihood that rates will be between 25 and 150 basis points lower by the end of 2024, with 23% seeing rates as low as 4.75, 21% seeing them at 4.25, and the highest plurality, 28%, seeing them at a low range of 4.5%. That suggests an optimistic market that sees the Fed's inflation fight easing off next year between 2 and 4.25 basis point reductions. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday, Melody back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also be on the lookout for our What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in the AM. Thanks as always to our production engineer, Todd Waiton, to you for turning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. And most importantly, go Phillies! Bye-bye.